Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome to New Books in Gender Studies, a podcast from the New Books Network. I'm Isabel Machado and I'll be your host for this episode. And today I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Ellie D. Hernandez about Transmovimientos, Latinx Queer Migrations, Bodies and Spaces. It was co-authored with Eddie Francisco Alvarez Jr. and Magda Garcia, and published by the University of Nebraska Press in 2021. Dr. Hernandez is an associate professor in the Department of Chicano Studies at the University of California at Santa Barbara, where she teaches and writes extensively on Chicanx literature and culture, citizenship, transnational Chicano and Latino cultural production, and Latinx LGBTQ studies. She's also the author of Post-Nationalism in Chicano Literature and Culture, and co-author of The Unmaking of Latino Citizenship, Culture, Politics, and Aesthetics. Transmovimientos focuses on queer, trans, and gender nonconforming communities of immigrants and social dissidents who reflect on and write about diaspora and migratory movements while navigating geographical and embodied spaces across gendered and racialized contexts. It forms a nuanced conversation between scholarship and social activism that speaks in concrete ways about diasporic and migratory LGBTQ communities who suffer from immoral immigration policies and political discourses that produce untenable living situations. It just received the silver medal in the Best LGBTQ-themed Book category at the 2022 International Latino Book Prize. Ellie, welcome to New Books in Gender Studies, and congratulations on the prize.
Thank you so much, Isabel. That's a wonderful introduction. Yes, we are very pleased with our finalist book prize as well as the silver medal. We worked very, very hard on the book. So it was a surprise for us, believe it or not. We were kind of surprised when we, in fact, were given the notification of being a finalist for the Latino International Book Award. And so we were quite excited and pleased, and we shared it with the contributors of the book, Transmovimientos, and so we were very honored and pleased and excited at the same time. So we're getting good buzz from the book, and we continue to, you know, push for more insights into what the book gives and provides the audiences and the readers.
It was a very well-deserved award. So to get us started, this is a question I love to ask everybody that comes in to the podcast. That's something I'm particularly always curious about. Tell us the book's origin story, or how did Transmovimientos come about?
It came about, it started with me. I've been at, you know, working with the publication of books for about, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years. So I had this idea, and I am from the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm from Laredo, Texas, which is right on the border to Mexico. So I grew up in a kind of transnational ambiente. We speak bilingually. We switch back and forth. We don't adhere to one culture or the other. and we sort of do our own thing. And so in terms of this particular book, Transmovimientos, I kept getting this sort of push, this sort of inspiration. And the title came about, Transmovimientos, came about through me. You know, I kept thinking about this title and then I would let it go. I would get the title back in my head and I would let it go. And I go, I don't have time for this. And finally, it just settled in. And I go, I think I have to write this book, or I have to put together a book on this. This was sort of like just very important. This was in 2015 that we put out the call for papers, the CFP. And so we put it out in like 2015 and people started contributing. And throughout, you know, the summer, throughout the winter and summer of 2015. And then, of course, we hit, you know, the following year, we finally, you know, collect some of the essays and we start to organize the book and so forth. And this is already 2016. And oh, we find out that, you know, by November of 2016, we find out that Trump has been elected president. So we were all kind of shocked and startled. And so we had to put the book on the down low because many people were concerned and upset and afraid because of the topic that we were dealing with. I mean, after all, look at what we're working with. We're working with immigrants. We're working with transgender, and we're working with Latinx populations, all of which were targets by the Trump administration. And so we continue to work on the project, even though it seemed like a kind of, you know, dangerous terrain that we were navigating. But in terms of how the title and how the organization of the book came about, it started with me and this title in my head. And so I tapped Eddie Alvarez, who was a graduate student and then graduated and got his first job in New York. Eddie Alvarez does transgender studies, whereas I specialize a lot in transnational studies, or national, you know, nationalism, post-nationalism, and transnationalism. So we were bringing the different component parts together. And I had, at the time, a research grant for a couple of $1,000s, and I hired Magda Garcia. And when she started bringing in her component, her sort of interest in direction and contribution, we said, well, you know, she has to be a co-editor for this book. And so we slowly brought the different component parts together into this book on Transmovimientos.
Just you sort of started to articulate that, but tell us how you define here. I think it's just such a beautiful definition of transmovimientos, right? It's bringing together different ways of understanding the word.
It is. And the transmovimiento part begins with the language. Like I mentioned, I'm from the border and we just would speak English. And we would just go back and forth, sin pensando, right? We would just do it. We weren't conscious of the rules or the boundaries of language and nation, okay? And so what I, in that sort of vein of thinking, in that sort of philosophy of thinking, I go, why should we adhere to the rules of academia or of established academic thought when we can rewrite the rules? Why should we limit ourselves in thinking about trans? And what is that? What is that trans, and how does it play out with us? And so everybody, all the co-editors have some kind of connection to the trans movimiento, whether as an immigrant, whether as a borderlands, whether as transgender, whether as, you know, non-binary and so forth. So basically, transmovimientos, if you really want to get into el sentido of the word, it is about not adhering to the rules. And so we believed and we practiced this in the way we conceptualize the book, but we also believe that it originates from queer thought. If you recall queer theory, it was all about breaking the rules, about like, we're going to do whatever we want. It's like, why should I live in this miserable set of conditions? And so for us, Transmovimiento was the first liberatory step in trying to articulate what we believe is going on and not give so much credit to the citational realities, you know, that are out there. I go, we got to make up our own articulations. We just have to. I mean, why should we, you know, be beholden to a reality that doesn't suit our interests? In other words, why would we put on clothes that doesn't fit? That doesn't work. And so that was the whole thinking of transmovimientos. But the real crux of it is to try to bring together this notion, this major notion of being a transnational or immigrante, or somebody who's displaced, and the notion of transgender. Okay. So we think of transgender as also a refusal, a kind of migratory effect from the gendered system, refusing to live in that gendered system. So you pack up and you go somewhere else, even if it's in your mind, even if you play it out in your lived reality, that the previous home doesn't exist anymore. You become like an immigrante. And so I thought this just has to happen. This book has just got to materialize because these two realities, the trans embodiments, are very unique to the 21st century. And so what better way than to bring in young scholars who want to talk about this, who want to sort of, you know, define their reality. And so that was the thinking behind it. At first, it was just this pesky little word that was gnawing at me. And then the next thing I know is like it's starting to grow and evolve and develop and conceptualized into a 21st century model of Latinx thinking, philosophies, cultural logics, and so forth. So that was the aim. That was sort of the direction that we took with it. But más que nada is that we trusted our instincts. We trusted the inspiration that we were getting. And we trusted the young scholars to step up and create something that is representative of the reality. But it was very difficult to do within the greater part of the Trump administration. We're trying to do this book, and it's like every day in the news there's something horrible going on. And so we were able to traverse all these different difficulties along the way. And I think we did well considering all the different challenges that were ahead of us.
And this rebellion against very stale academic norms can already be seen in your collection, right? The selection of the text. The other important trends here is transdisciplinary, right?
Right.
A very rich and an important collection of texts that you put here in conversation. And the chapters range from performance analysis to ethnographic pieces to poetic personal essays. So how did you decide on which pieces to include? Tell me a little bit more about that process.
Well, that process involved, again, the call for papers. And we received quite a bit of interest. We received about maybe 25, 30 submissions that were solid. There were some submissions that were just promises, but they never actually, you know, gave us an essay. So we actually poured through about 25 or 30 solid selections, and some were kind of professional looking. They were wonderful, but they were more policy oriented, like for border studies, and didn't really deal with the sort of nuances of being queer and transnational at the same time. So we try to define it according to the goals of the book, that we wanted to address both the transnational or migratory, the Latinx for sure, and of course the trans element, the transgender or the transmigration and so forth. So we wanted something along both those lines, not exclusively, you know, traditional political science type of policy papers. No, we wanted more the human element, the substance of being a human in this reality of this. What does the transnational mean? Not in terms of an economic analysis, but what does the transnational and the transgender mean in terms of the human? element. How do people articulate their sense of place in this when you feel incredibly displaced almost on a constant basis? And so we wanted to capture that, but we also wanted to create the space, the academic space, so that others might follow our traditional, breaking ground with a new style and a new methodology, because we didn't want to create the trends here as an object of study. What we were aiming for was to enrich the lives of others and for them to see themselves as part of this book. This is their, this is much a tribute to some of the people that are discussed in this book. In other words, bridge all the different divides, the academic, the geographical, the gendered, and so forth. So that was the aim of the book, is that really, really was to form a liberatory practice in the work that we do, to be conscientious. Some folks are really, they're more committed to the discipline than to the suffering or to the reality that is out there. And we just said, we're not going to do that. We're going to commit to what's out there. And that's what drove the selection of the pieces. We wanted insight. We wanted sensitivity. We wanted a regard for the culture, regard for the people that we're talking about, and so forth. So that's what made it through the list, ultimately.
Yes. And speaking about this commitment, right, you describe the book as a critical anthology that forms a nuanced conversation between scholarship and social activism. So I wanted you to talk a bit more about this, the critical and critical anthology. And was this, the plan from the start? I believe it is, right, from what you've been telling me. And this combination, right, of theory and analysis with embodied knowledge that's so strong in the book.
We had to, definitely go the route of a critical approach, meaning by critical approach, I mean that we approach things with a critical eye towards the existing social policy, which wasn't hard to do because it was just, horrific what was going on the last few years. But we also wanted to create a critical space so that others may follow. In other words, we wanted to create what I call our pavers for future scholarship. So in order to do that, you have to have a critical academic foundation and lens. And so I wasn't sure if I would, we would be able to find 10, 12, 15 scholars in this area. We were breaking ground in this new field, in this new arrangement. And so fortunately and interestingly, the junior scholars are the ones who stepped up, the graduate students and the junior people. I just to put it in perspective, there's 10 essays in the collection. And at the time of submission and at the time that people were sending their materials over to us, 8 out of the 10 people there, or should I say 11, because there's one essay that has multiple authors. There was about 9 people out of the 11 who were either graduate students or junior professors.
That's great.
And that's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's only 2 people were on at the senior level, and that was Carlos de Sena and Anita Revilla Tijerina. And so that, just to put in perspective, many of them were still graduate students trying to finish up their dissertations. And so they stepped up and really saw the opening. They saw what I was seeing. They sort of felt and were already writing it. But it's one thing to sort of write a La Brava academically. It's another thing to find your community, okay? So some of these young scholars were finding their community for the first time. Mind you, we didn't have a conference. We didn't have a call for paper and a gathering and all that. This was in the middle of COVID. So we just had to do it as in the only way we could. We just did it a la brava. We just went for it. And so everybody just trusted everything that was happening. And so the young scholars were like, well, heck, I got to get my work out. So they did. And so it's these young scholars that are driving this book. And then check this out. So we have all these junior graduate student, you know, professors and so forth. And then they find out they won this major book award on their first publication ever. And so that became really, really wonderful. So I was very happy for them.
Yes.
And so when you asked me, like, you know, what was the direction of the book? It wasn't about me. It wasn't about, you know, the field. It was about them. You know, they stepped up. They showed up. They showed their style. They showed their grades. They showed their scholarship. And for them to win an award, they are just beside themselves. They were just crazy bouncing off the walls. They were like in disbelief that on their first publication ever, they're part of a major book prize in the collection of stories. Can you believe that?
The other thing that for me, what this book brings is just the power of stories, but also this responsibility in telling stories. That I kept thinking about this with each chapter. The authors here are often part of the stories and the movements that they're covering. But most of the chapters rely also on testimonials, either personal or someone else's testimonials. So talk a bit about the importance of carefully listening to and documenting the stories of people who are experiencing intersectional axes of marginalization.
Well, this is where my literary background comes in, because I teach about testimonial. Oh, rather, I teach about the power of testimonial in Latin American literature. It's that witnessing aspect that is so critical. In other words, so these stories are written in such a way that they become powerful because they become testimony for the witnessing of others to participate in the collective experience of grief, of sorrow, of alienation, of tristeza. So even though there seems to be a lot of distress happening, we also see it as an opportunity to create a collective that consumes all of this distress. In other words, the collective sort of begins to shape the literary or the testimonial aspect, and you begin to see people actually finding a sense of place, a sense of reason, a sense of belonging that otherwise may not have been there. And that this is where you can create power in the community. So does, you know, so this collective of writers for this book have gone on to share in their different communities the stories. They share these stories with their collectives. For example, Bambi Salcedo, she's, you know, a powerful contributor in the way she works with the activism in her comunidad in Los Angeles. And so that comes across both in her storytelling, but also in her testimony and in her ability to witness and share for and speak for the community. These are leaders right now. So these are leaders who are beginning to, you know, shape their discourse for the next few decades. So it's that power of voice that defies, you know, the terms of their existence. And for that, it's like even becomes more amazing that each story becomes a powerful little tool for each community member to work with and find and use and bring back to the community. So that I think it's inspiring. Especially the way the testimonial works in Latin American literature.
How did you decide on the four sections of the book? Was that something that the submissions suggested, or something that you and your co-editors already had in mind?
No, we didn't have in mind. We sort of just, it's like marbles, canicas. We just sort of saw the different essays as a bunch of little canicas thrown on the ground. And then we started looking at patterns. And then we decided, Eddie and I voted that Magda should organize it. So Magda Garcia is the one who's responsible for the organization of the chapters, believe it or not. Magda is the one who laid it out and gave each category their title. So that was her work. Eddie and I worked on the conceptualization of the introduction and all these other different elements, but it is actually Magda Garcia who gave the shape, the organization and shape of the book. She's the one that has the organizational manita de gato. She has that touch for organization. So we credit her for that.
Wonderful. Just for folks who do not have the book yet, the four sections are 21st Century Student Movements, Reading Performance and Performativity from Cuba to Los Angeles, Memory and Memoir Between Sueños y Pesadillas, and From Urban Landscape to Sites of Incarceration. And on chapter 9, Lorena Muñoz notes that, quote, gender performance and queer performance are constructed, created, and lived differently while navigating different spaces. So I wanted you to talk a bit about space and place, such important themes in the book. Final section deals more directly with queer spaces, queer geographies, but it's something that is, present throughout the book.
Correct. Space is everything. And if you're looking at the transnational, it's how you navigate the space. So in terms of what the space and the gendered situation is the one that sort of unravels the nation. Let me explain that further. For the last 2,000 years, we've invested, rather gender has been invested in this biological notion of the self. And that has come to define our sense of place. A mother, a father, a family, you go to work, everything is defined according to that. Okay. So now we're in a transnational global spatialization where a lot of these rules are being undone. And so that the matter of space becomes more difficult to define, or rather more impossible to define. And so some people want to go back to the way, it was empire or colonialism or whatever you want to call it. But we're saying is that we're in a totally different terrain where different possibilities are happening and can exist, not just in Lorena's conceptualization of space, even though she looks at L.A. and L.A. is a very 21st century spatial arrangement. But it is also very transnational. It is also very global. It is also very immigrante. It's also very Latinx. Noticeably, these concepts are reshaping our understanding of freedom, of how a nation and a collective are formed. And I think it shows promise and possibility for future generations, if we begin to just give ourselves permission to think differently. And so that's what the book and Lorena's chapter and many of the other essays in the book are saying, that we should really use this as an opportunity to, think beyond a certain understanding of space. And so the whole enterprise of the transnational and the global, which is sort of implied here in the book, we don't take it as a big theorization. We take it from the standpoint of what people are saying. But the entire global transnational is transforming almost every part of the world, from Europe to Australia to Africa. There is diasporas, there is displacement all the world through. And it is largely because of the transnational and the global. And so we just see this as one instance millions, if not hundreds of millions, of cases where the spatial geographies from Roman Empire to the colonial times are completely being undone. So it has historical significance. And it is really up to us to define what the next set of arrangements will be. And this is the time to begin to define that. And that's what we see happening in the book, in the chapters, and in the thinking about the space or the spatialization.
Speaking of space and place, we can't end this interview without talking about the border, the borderlands, right? So important for the book. You describe yourself as somebody from the frontera. And talk a little bit about the border or the borderlands as not just a very, you know, tangible, specific geographical location, but also as a symbolic and emotional space in the experiences that are being represented in Transmovimientos.
Well, the border spaces are very unique. Border spaces, the interstices between this and that space, they're very unique. And it's ironic. There's a certain irony to that, because these borders tend to be less, como te diré, they're less regulated, but also they create also tensions, whether trying to, let's say, for example, navigate citizenship. It's like, well, you know, everybody's trying to check each other out in a border space, whether or not they're citizens or not, or what actually constitutes citizenship, what constitutes belonging. Do you really need papers to find yourself, you know, belonging in a given nation? So there are all these varied and intangible little rules. For example, like passing for straight is might be considered as a tangible rule for belonging, even though you might be queer. And so that's why you have many instances where you have the down low. Or you have people passing for citizenship in other ways. So borderlands are unique spatializations when it comes to having to define certain identities. We're used to, and I guess in the Western culture, defining things according to identities, whereas borderland spaces are less attentive to the identities and more attentive to the beingness. Who do you feel like? What do you want to be today? What can you traverse? So there's not growing up in the border, I know for a fact that people did not recognize borders or boundaries in the same way. And so much more was possible with that or because of that. And whereas in other spaces, such as the spaces of academe versus the spaces of, let's say, street vending, the rules are different. And so we must be cognizant of the fact that even though we try to have gendered rules or rules for citizenship or rules of culture, they're not always easily, what can I say, managed, but rather they're traversed, and they're traversed on a constant basis. So there's no, you know, single way to create an identity-based movement based on this constant state of traversal. And so that's why the book is so important to us, because we witness so many examples of the way that happens all the time. And it doesn't matter if you're in New York or if you're in Florida or if you're on the El Paso-Mexico border or if you're in Los Angeles. It is consistently the same. It's about undoing the rules that bind citizenship and gender. And so that's why this book is exciting for us.
And very exciting for me as well. I just enjoyed it so much that I have to ask you, what are you working on next? Is there any project you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
I am working on, this is just recently, I had some research money, so I traveled. I want to do something on Uvalde, Texas, the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas. So that's basically what I'm working on like right now, to sort of flush out more the gendered queer stuff that gets hidden. And this is the irony of Latino cultures. It's like, we don't talk about these things in public, but they're talked about in private. So I want to go explore some more stuff on the Uvalde shooting and how gender, sexuality, transgenderism played out, if it exists, if it was part of the discourse.
Oh, and well, I hope you'll come back to talk to us when you have something about that. I've just
the people don't want to say anything. No quieren hablar, but it's in the middle of a tragedy, so I didn't want to push too hard. But that's what I'm working on right now.
Best of luck with that. And Ali, gracias, muchas, muchas gracias. Thank you for talking and taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Isabel. Wonderful show. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Oh, gracias. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of New Books in Gender Studies, a podcast from the New Books Network. I just spoke with Dr. Ali D. Hernandez about Transmovimientos, Latinx Queer Migrations, Bodies, and Spaces, co-authored with Eddie Francisco Alvarez Jr. and Magda Garcia, and published by the University of Nebraska Press in 2021. I'm Isabel Machado, and until next time.